Coffee Monday is more than a podcast. It's a movement to reshape the way we approach Mondays and the week ahead. It's about embracing the reality that work doesn't have to dominate our lives. It's about finding that sweet spot where passion, purpose, and a cup of motivation connect. Filmed and recorded in California's Central Valley, join me, your host, Ray Pardini-Matson, as I invite thriving professionals to share their stories of how they're crafting a life that's both vibrant and balanced. Welcome back to Coffee Monday. Today, we have a special guest joining us, Dr. Mark Chin, an award-winning plastic surgeon and founder of the Valley Institute of Plastic Surgery. With a passion for enhancing both external and internal beauty, Dr. Chin is known for his expertise in cosmetic procedures like the famous Mommy Makeover. Join us as we dive into Dr. Chin's story while discussing the latest trends and answering FAQs for all things plastic surgery. Okay, so you're from the Bay Area?
Yes.
Originally?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I grew up in Oakland. I was born in Oakland and I grew up in the East Bay.
Okay.
And just in kind of in a average white middle class neighborhood. Mm-hmm. My dad was hardworking and he was an accountant. My mom was a nurse, and I have five brothers and sisters.
I love that.
In this little house.
So where do you fall in line of the six?
In the middle. Yeah.
Three or four?
Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4. Number four.
So you're the fourth. Sweet. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. The middle son. And so in high school, I was interested in sciences, and mm-hmm. I knew my parents wanted me to go to college, and so I just went locally. Started at Cal State Hayward, and then a lot of my friends went to actually a community college, and so I ended up transferring to Chabot College, and that's where I met my wife, my future wife.
Aww.
And she's very determined, headstrong, she's very wise. She had a plan, and she wanted to go to San Jose State to get an administration of justice. And
wow.
I didn't have a major.
Yeah.
Other than okay, I'll follow you down there.
Yeah.
And we went down there with her brothers, and she wanted to go into corrections with her administration of justice, and she kind of looked at me and said, okay, you're following me, but what do you want to do?
Sweet.
And it's like, well, interestingly, I got my medical exposure as being an elevator operator at a hospital in Oakland.
Oh, wow.
And I would hear code blues, and I would run down mm-hmm. and go to the ER and watch the ER doctors work on patients, bring them back to life, treat their wounds. That was kind of exciting for me.
Wow.
And I said, I wouldn't mind being a doctor. And she says, well, you should go for it. Now, moving down to San Jose State, I had not been that academically strong, let's say,
okay.
my first 2 years.
Yeah.
And so now I had focus, and I majored in biochemistry, and I spent 3 years there, and she continued to pursue her degree in administration of justice. And to strengthen my ability to get into medical schools, because it's very difficult at that time. Mm-hmm. I thought I should go to graduate school. And so I went to UC Berkeley and got a master's in public health.
Amazing.
And then it was actually tough to get into medical school. And it took me actually 3 times.
Yeah.
Over 100 applications. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. it is something that my dad taught me with perseverance to, if it's something you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I got accepted. But then it was like, well, my wife and I had jobs in the Bay Area. Is it something that we should pursue?
Yeah.
And we prayed about it and said, okay, let's continue applying to medical school. And lo and behold, I got accepted. But now it's all the way over to Virginia.
Oh, wow.
So my wife says, as long as I'm with you,
aww,
it would be
that's
okay.
Sweet. Yeah.
So,
and at this point, are you married or dating? Or?
We are married.
Okay.
She is working for the government.
Okay.
Internal Revenue. And
wow.
What was nice about working for the federal government is that everywhere we went,
she had
there's a job.
That's interesting. Yeah.
And so she put me through medical school. She put me through graduate school.
Hmm.
She followed me because, you know, I wasn't working during medical school. So
yeah,
we went all the way to Richmond, Virginia, and we spent 4 years. And that's
wow.
A little bit different than California.
I bet. Yeah.
And she worked for Internal Revenue there. And then after 4 years of medical school, I decided to go into general surgery.
Yeah.
And I got accepted to Loma Linda University in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
So we had one child in Virginia.
Oh, okay.
And then we came down to Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent 4 years in general surgery there. Had another child.
Aw.
And then after being exposed to plastic surgery programs and what that field can offer, mm-hmm. then I applied to plastic surgery programs in California, and I got accepted in San Francisco at St. Francis Memorial Hospital.
Wow.
And we spent 3 years there.
Yeah.
And
so back to the Bay Area a little
bit,
right?
Now we're back home.
Yeah.
After going on the road for such a long time.
Yeah. And two children later.
Three now.
Oh, three.
So we had a third one.
Sweet.
At our residency in San Francisco.
Aw.
And then the frightening moment had to be when I graduated is, where do I go now?
Right.
You know, I have to look for a job.
Yeah.
And Lena was a branch manager now at in San Francisco. Up and coming. And it was a difficult decision to make as a family where to set up shop.
Right.
And as a, you know, you're gonna open up a practice, and there's already 70 plastic surgeons in San Francisco.
Right. Wow.
And one of my
70?
Yes.
Wow.
At that time,
yeah, that's a lot.
And one of my mentors told me about Fresno and said, "Well, my wife's dad's a dentist there, and he has a thriving practice, and why don't you go look out there?" And I had a couple friends out in Fresno, and actually, Fresno was wide open then. There was only about 12 plastic surgeons.
See, I didn't even know we had that many.
Well, there's probably about 20 now.
Wow.
But Fresno was the sixth largest city in California.
Yeah.
Didn't have a ocean view, but
right.
It was the sixth largest. It's now the fifth largest.
Right.
So as opening up a business, you think about opportunity. And so
mm-hmm.
I came out with my children and a nanny for the first year. And Lena stayed in San Francisco so that we had an income.
Mm-hmm.
And she sacrificed being away from the children and would come to Fresno every so many weeks by train.
Yeah,
and so
wow.
She has been very supportive of my academic growth, the family, and then when she came out, she took a year off, and after a year of leave of absence, and she decided to retire. So
mm-hmm.
She's been very involved in the community since, as she's a fairly busy and wise woman, that she has been someone that I really looked up to and I appreciate all with my heart.
Love that. Yeah. I love that. That's so special. And
up.
I feel like, I am for you too. I feel like so many stories of successful people cannot be done without a supportive spouse.
Absolutely.
Like truly. Like it cannot, you know. people ask me sometimes, you know, how do you do it all? And I don't. I'm not even trying to, but I can do what I do because of Michael and my supportive spouse. You are where you are because of your supportive wife. Right? I mean, it's everything. It's everything.
It's taken me too long.
Yeah.
To appreciate her.
Yeah. Oh, that's really special. It's so sweet. And I do think, too, you bring up a really strong point of Fresno being a place for great opportunity.
Even for education for the family, it was a nice place to raise the children.
Mm-hmm.
They went on to have nice post-high school educations.
And great.
They are doing well.
We have great schools here. Schools. I mean, I grew up here. I did the whole boomerang thing, they call it, you know, left and came back sort of thing. So when I left, I had graduated high school and I didn't come back until my early 20s. And, but I loved my childhood. Like I loved growing up here. Nothing but fond memories of the schools that I went to and the friends that we've met and I'm still friends with and now That's raising great. My yeah. kids with them, uh-huh. you know?
Yeah.
And so while my plan wasn't initially to come back to Fresno, I was living in LA and thought I was going to be there forever. I'm happy I did because I get to give my children that childhood that I had, you know? And Absolutely. You were able to gift your children with a great upbringing as well and be able to start a new business. In your case, I mean, a practice is a business.
I'm still working on it.
30 years later, I think you're doing great. That's
Pays
awesome.
The bills.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That was really special. Hey, coffee lovers, Ray here, and I've got some exciting news for you all. If you're anything like me, you know that a good cold beverage, whether it's iced coffee or tea or boba, can make any day better. And that's why I am thrilled to tell you about Dutch Bros Coffee's latest limited time offer, Poppin' Boba. Available now through April 30th at all Dutch Bros locations, Poppin' Boba is the perfect way to add a burst of flavor to your favorite drinks. Choose from two delicious flavors, vanilla honey or strawberry, and mix them into any of your favorite yummy Dutch Bros drinks. I've personally tried the Poppin' Boba Vanilla Freeze, and it's a true treat. The blend of vanilla coffee with the vanilla honey boba is divine. But that's not all. They have other flavors too, like caramel chai, the Poppin' Boba Fire Lizard Rebel, and Poppin' Boba Lemonade, each offering a unique and delicious flavor profile. So don't sleep on this offer. Head over to your nearest Dutch Bros today and treat yourself to some Poppin' Boba goodness. And follow them at Dutch Bros Fresno on Instagram for the latest updates and promos. Cheers, friends.
Okay, so if they go to my website, markchinmd.com, that's kind of easy, right?
Okay.
Markchinmd.com.
Perfect.
And there's a contact, and they can request email and information about a particular procedure.
Okay, so they inquire online first, essentially.
Or they call the office.
Or call,
And schedule a consultation.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that the consultations are more of an educational type of opportunity, not for me to sell them an operation.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas some other places, you're not even seeing the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You are seeing who I term the sales consultant.
Mm-hmm.
And they are trying to get you in the door. And then on the day of the pre-op or on the day of surgery, you will meet the doctor. And
this is
a personal relationship that you're trying to establish with the patient that they need to talk to the person doing the actual procedure, and the doctor has to determine if this patient has reasonable expectations so that they can meet them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a two-way interview.
Right. It's good point.
Yeah. It's not just, oh, I want to have breast augmentation, and when can I have it done, and how much is it?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's different models of having you know, these consultations, but mine is to educate the patient to see if it's really going to be beneficial for them, because there are certain long-term implications of a lot of our procedures.
I believe it. Well, and you also want to set them up for realistic results, right? Like if they come to you and say they want this, elaborate look that maybe isn't healthy or, mm-hmm. I don't know, is that a thing? Isn't healthy or isn't even attainable, you know?
A lot of the things that we do can impact their life, but even the surgical procedure itself has risks. Mm-hmm. And so I want patients to have a full understanding of what their experience is going to be from start to finish, mm-hmm. Including getting prepared for the operation, going through the operation, recovery, being patient for waiting for the results that they want and expect, and then what are going to be the long-term results of that procedure. Mm-hmm. Because there are some, for example, breast augmentation. It's a lifetime commitment until you have the day where you get them removed. Because it's not just one and done, and you're coming in when you're 20 years old and having them done. Mm-hmm. Well, they have to be replaced at not on a scheduled basis, but there will be times where the body changes from pregnancies, weight changes, or a failure of the breast implant where they have to be removed. So they have to be prepared for mm-hmm. revisionary surgery.
Okay, we're just diving in, and now I have a question on that. So I think we'll just keep going with this. I think it's great. So I think people, I've heard that, you know, in getting your breasts done, that you have to get them redone every 10 to 15 years. Is that true?
No. There are warranties with these implantable devices. That's what mm-hmm. they're referred to. Mm-hmm. And there is a lifetime warranty as far as like if there is a failure of the implant. What do I mean by failure? A saline implant is has a silicone shell. It's filled with salt water. It's the same as IV intravenous fluid. Mm-hmm. One day that's going to leak, and you will know because the breast will get smaller as the leakage occurs.
Okay.
And there's a variety of reasons why it might leak. With a silicone-filled implant, it's a gel, and it can also, what we call rupture, you won't lose size when it ruptures. You may lose shape, or it may feel differently. But having a ruptured implant can break through the capsule, and the silicone can get into the breast tissue and can form nodules, and then you'll be concerned because you have a lump. But then they recommend that you get an MRI or an ultrasound every so many years to check on it, check on the integrity, and then that's when you would have to have it replaced. But I've seen breast implants in for 30 years, 20 years. So if the patient... If the patient is still pleased with their look and the feel mm-hmm. at 15 years, and if it's not broken, I don't fix it. Mm-hmm. Because a saline implant will tell you when it needs to be replaced because it will leak.
Right. So is silicone harder to tell, it sounds like?
Yes. So
because it doesn't go down as quick as like a saline would.
Yes.
Right?
And it might be picked up on mammogram, ultrasounds. Are being used a little more cost effective, but the most specific one is the MRI, which can be more specific. But even sometimes an MRI might detect a rupture, and it wasn't. But most of the time, I encounter a ruptured implant because they are wanting to change it after so many years, and they don't even know that it's ruptured. And then we get in there, and then boom, it's
over. And they haven't had or experienced any symptoms.
Yeah, yeah. As long as it stays in the capsule, around the implant, that's the scar tissue. They may not even know that it's ruptured.
So what is that called when you could get ill from its breast implant illness, right?
Yes.
Fairly rare or not?
It's becoming more... diagnosed in some patients who have had implants for a long time. They've gone to different doctors trying to determine what these vague
symptoms are. Yeah.
Chronic fatigue, joint pain, weakness, sleepiness. Mm-hmm. And the internist can't find out a reason. The rheumatologist has done a workup. They've gone to a dermatologist. And they have if has history of having breast implants, silicone or saline, mm-hmm. and they have suggested that the implants might be causing your symptoms, and so then they see us and they want to have them out. Now, some patients, we do remove them and they feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that is peace of mind that mm-hmm. I have them out, and others don't get any better. They wait a period of time. They assess the appearance of their breasts after they've had implants taken out for a while, and some want them replaced.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess you don't know until you go through that process, right?
But we try to counsel them, and right. There's often there has been an association with a history of anxiety in many of the patients, and so we want to help them, but we also say that this may or may not help your symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, until you take them out, they won't know.
It sounds like through your consults and just, you know, these experiences with these patients, you're educating them a lot, right? On like what to expect, the reality of this may or may not be what you think it's going to be as far as like removing them. That might not be the answer. So mm-hmm. then they want them back X amount of years later, right?
Yeah.
So as far as process goes for somebody inquiring to work with you, I guess is the proper term. Sounds like breast augmentations are at the top of the list as far as procedures, but what other types of procedures do you specialize in?
You mentioned the term mommy makeover. And
yeah,
so
I know we've talked, let's talk about that. Okay. What is that? What is a mommy makeover? Cause I feel like, you know, how big do you want to go with it?
Well, I think if you look at what happens during pregnancy and the changes that they have from their prepartum body to pregnancy, prolonged nursing, weight gain, stretched skin, loss of muscle tone in the abdomen due to the pregnancy, multiple pregnancies, results from C-sections that have scars, and then the patients try to gain their prepartum weight back, well, their body is usually not the same.
Truth.
Their breasts have gotten often smaller than they started with due to atrophy after nursing. And so the breasts are smaller. Sometimes they're sagging. The abdomen, even if they've gotten back to their prepartum weight, has lost its tone. And sometimes you have patients that, quote, look pregnant when they're not pregnant.
Yeah.
And that's kind of distressing to them when someone asks them, how many months are you? And
that,
they say,
yeah,
I'm not pregnant.
Uh-huh.
And then they have a C-section scar, and then the loose skin folds over that scar, and then they don't want to, you know, sit at the edge of the pool. And they have a loss of body image.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that mommy makeovers are, you know, they deserve a lot. You know, they go through so much, and
true.
And the weight changes, and they do not say, they do not regret having children.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of like after 10 years, 15 years, and now they're in their late 40s or 50s, and it's kind of, this is mommy time now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, surgery does have some expense, and so they're, most of them are selfless and wait until they can afford it, and they save up, and then now they just want to feel better about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is the aging process going on, but you also have still the changes of pregnancy.
Well, and so, yeah, I mean, having three kids myself and nursing each of them, I feel like as a mom, you get your body back. Like, it's after you're done having kids, you're done nursing. It's like, okay, now I can have my body back. For example, when you're nursing, you have certain restrictions. You can't drink. Some women have to be dairy-free because their mm-hmm. children are allergic to that, you know?
Yeah.
There's
a lot of sacrifices.
There's a lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I remember after knowing that we were done, I was like, okay, I finally get my body back. Like, not in a selfish way, but just in a way of like, I can take Tylenol if I have a headache or something, you know, like even down to medications and things you consume, you have to be so conscious of everything. So that's an interesting perspective. And I think that's a relatable for a lot of women. Like, okay, now's my time to like take
work
care of
myself.
Yeah.
And you do get fit and they have trainers and then it's kind of like, okay, I have my six pack, but I can't see it. Or, right? And you're real proud of getting your tone back. But if you have loose skin and the tummy, sometimes they get a hernia. And they there's something called diastasis recti, where the muscle, your six-pack muscles actually separate and have a gap. And then the abdominal contents push against the muscles, and that's what caused that flaccidity and protuberance and looking pregnant. And part of doing, let's say, a tummy tuck is to actually bring those muscles back together, improve the abdominal tone so that it will look like it's being held in without you having to suck it in.
Right.
Like I do.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. I think in general, your body will never be the same after having kids, regardless of if it's one or four or five. But I think it's great that you're helping them kind of rebuild their confidence after going through such a selfless time in their life. You know, it's okay to, you know, the mom guilt is real, but it's okay to, you know, be able to take care of yourself and feel good for yourself, for your family, for, you know, just life in general. So a tummy or a mommy makeover is a breast augmentation or potentially a breast lift, right?
Yes. So
depending on what they may need or you advise they need.
Yes. If they've just lost some volume and you pick an appropriate size implant, we try to do things in proportion, then the size of the implant can just expand the skin envelope. But if the the nipple or rear complex is too low relative to where you want your mound, then we may have to tighten the skin, might have to raise the position of the nipple, and that's called a breast lift. It's often done with an implant. If you have enough breast volume to make a nice shape, then oftentimes you don't need to have an implant, but the implant does give more cleavage, more fullness, more side breasts, more projection. And so it's often helpful in patients who need a breast lift to give them that overall shape. And it doesn't have to be big. I like to have things proportionate to their body, but sometimes they need some tightening of the tissues as well. And then the tummy tuck is part of trying to get the waistline back. We often do liposuction around the hips and the flanks to help the whole circumferential waistline. Sometimes they have the muffin top and you do a tummy tuck, they still have that muffin top. So if you do some liposuction in the hips and the flanks, it'll help give you that hourglass back. And then you do a tummy tuck and you'll get a tighter, flatter abdomen. And that's usually what's done in a mommy makeover. Sometimes you can do them together. It depends on the complexity of each component, the breasts or the tummy, the lipo, because there are certain risks with having longer surgeries.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And then if there's another area that's a little bit more private that often gets treated at times as well.
Yes. Thanks for hanging with us here on Coffee Monday. Here's a word from our partners. Ever wonder where the gorgeous flowers from our centerpieces come from? The arrangement is styled by floral artist Darcy Hovsepian of DH Floral, and the flowers themselves are actually grown and sourced from local flower farms right here in our Central Valley, thanks to the creation of the San Joaquin Flower Collective. The San Joaquin Flower Collective is a partnership of small flower farms to provide 100% locally grown ingredients to flower collectives and flower lovers alike. As the first and only source for all locally grown flowers in the Central Valley, their biggest mission is to reduce the need for imported flowers. By streamlining the ordering process with an online shopping experience, prioritizing collaboration over competition, and raising awareness for our local flower movement, They are changing the way farm-grown flowers are bought and sold in the Central Valley. As a wholesaler or a retailer or just a flower lover yourself, you can follow along at SJ Flower Collective on Instagram for their latest happenings and fresh bloom drops. Yes, interesting. So just kind of depends on your story of how you've birthed your children.
Yes.
And all the things that your body has gone through, right? So it's amazing the things that you can do now.
Well, there are, we talk about trends.
Yeah.
And what am I seeing more of? And
yeah, so let's talk about that. So I feel like in recent years, probably in the last, I don't know, I'm bad at perception of time, maybe 5 to 10 years, the whole duck lips was a look as mm-hmm. far as like cosmetics, right? Mm-hmm. Like the bigger the lip, the better. It was definitely a look at some point. But I think it was you and I that were talking about, like, also when you have a trend like that, that literally is living on your face, it actually reversely dates you, because then you, once the trend is gone, you know what I'm saying? You look older because it's not a thing anymore. So there was the duck lips thing. I don't know if that's ever coming back. There was the BBL, Brazilian butt lift. Is that still yes. a thing?
It's still it was big. Fairly popular.
Mm-hmm. Really?
There are some that are having skinny BBLs, meaning just to give some shape. But a lot of patients want large buttocks, and it's a big trend, and it requires wow. liposuction to, which is usually taken from certain parts of the body that you don't want it, the muffin top, the hips, flanks, tummy. Sometimes the thighs are used, arms. But sometimes the body is being sacrificed just for a large buttock.
So and wait, you take the fat from other places in their body and you put it in their butt?
Yes, it's called fat transfer.
They're That's fat, what it is. I didn't know what it was.
It's like fat grafts.
Wow,
you've heard of skin grafts where yeah. someone has a burn, mm-hmm, you take mm-hmm, skin from one mm-hmm. part of the body, you put it on the burned wound, and then it will, quote, take. Mm-hmm. It will live.
Mm-hmm.
So there's buttock implants, which I don't do for a variety of reasons, but
that's what I wasn't sure what that was. Okay, interesting.
There's buttock implants, but with the fat transfers, let's say I don't like my muffin top, and if I just do liposuction, I think my waistline will look better. But you can take the fat that you harvested, that you removed, and you have to process the fat so that the fat will live when you inject it into another part of the body.
Mm-hmm.
I seldom do it into the breasts, but there has been fat transfers to the breasts. And the popular thing is to do the fat transfer into the buttocks, but it is a high risk operation. What I mean by that is, of all the things that we do in plastic surgery, cosmetic surgery, it has the highest mortality.
Really?
The highest death rate.
Wow.
And
why do you think that is? I mean, it's obviously a risk, like any surgery, but what makes it so much riskier?
It's been fairly controversial because what happens is that the fat gets either injected into a blood vessel, or there's a tear in the blood vessel, and there's surrounding fat, and it will be sucked up into large veins, and it gets returned to the heart, and then it gets passed into the lungs, and it causes blockage, and you can't breathe, and
can't breathe.
You
it's
have
scary.
Shock, and you have heart attacks, and you die.
Mm-hmm.
And they have identified the main cause of that, and it's putting the fat in the wrong place.
Yeah.
And there are some places that have a production line, and the doctor works till midnight and, you know, gets fatigued, and
yeah.
they inadvertently inject it, or it gets into the bloodstream and people die from fat embolism. So you can Google it.
Yeah, wow. And, maybe not. Or don't.
There's certain parts of there's certain parts of the country where it's very popular.
Wow.
And they have made certain laws, particularly in Florida.
Interesting. Yeah.
And people fly there and have BBLs and
Knowing the risk, they still go through with it, obviously, because they want it that badly. Wow, interesting. Okay, so what's trending right now? What are you seeing? Our BBLs clearly are still popular, it sounds like, regardless of the risk.
Still popular.
Which is interesting. Yeah. What are you seeing, like, the pendulum swinging a little bit more to something more natural? People are going that way.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right?
I think that one of our jobs is plastic surgeons is when the patient leaves our office is to make them look better, but not done, you know, not that they've had a particular procedure, whether or not it's glowing skin or improving of their figure. It's more of a natural look. So when you talk about the duck lips, you know, unfortunately there's going to be some people who have had injectables into their face and they can end up being what we call cripples. Because if they've stretched out their skin in their lips or the face, and then it's kind of like, well, I need more to maintain it.
Right.
And then when they stop, and they're going to have things that are deflate, even with BBLs, as you make large buttocks, and with age, your body composition isn't going to change, and you're going to have sagging buttocks.
Yeah.
I think that's also true with large breast implants.
Makes sense.
You want to be bigger and bigger. I think it's in the over 30 population, I think things are being done more more in proportionate to the body versus the 20-year-olds. I think the breast implants are a little bit larger in that, hey, of course they look fake, but I look cute.
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of friends that got theirs done in their 20s and that was the goal. It was like bigger, great. That's what I, you know. So different time, right? Different age, different maturity. So you're kind of seeing now women wanting to kind of go more natural or more, like you said, more proportionate to their body.
Yes. And so you can be, even with breast implants, you can be disproportionately too small as you can be disproportionately too big, right?
Right.
And
right, true.
Fitness is now trending, and when you lose body fat, you also lose fat in your breasts. You store less estrogen in your fat. And so sometimes they just want to have something that looks good in a tank top or a two-piece, and to just have the lucky look, you know? And so it's like, oh, you're lucky. And they look like that's what they should have.
Right, right.
And
wouldn't that be the goal, I would think? Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
That's our goal, is to try to have them look proportionate.
Yeah, makes sense. So how, just kind of taking a step back, I feel like plastic surgery is so intriguing. You're an artist of sorts, right? You get to obviously consult with your patients on what they want and, you know, meet them in the middle sometimes with realistic expectations of what they want. But there's an art to what you do. And as a doctor going through med school, there's many different paths you can take. So what's your story and what drew you to plastic surgery specifically? I'm curious.
I always was intrigued with anatomy. I like science classes, and I like the anatomy lab. And I felt that surgery, when I started thinking about medicine in a surgical and a specialty, medicine is really good in keeping people alive, right?
Right.
Okay. But we prescribe a lot of medications, pills, to fine-tune the body for the long run. Now, surgery was more of a immediate change. You know, if, the appendix is burst, I got to go in there and I can cure them of their appendicitis. I can cure them of of an organ that is diseased. And so I felt that that was more of an immediate result. And so I sought out surgical specialties, and I, after medical school, I chose to enter a general surgery program, and I loved it. It was, we got to see the anatomy in a human, and mm-hmm. we can make those changes immediately. During my general surgery residency, I at Loma Linda, one of the most fascinating surgeries that I was involved with was with a renowned heart surgeon, Leonard Bailey. And it was just me and him operating on this one patient. It was an infant who had a congenital heart disease. She needed a heart transplant.
Wow.
And we removed the heart, and we were cooling down the body, and literally I'm looking into this child's chest with no heart. Now, we waited for the igloo to come in.
Yeah.
And with the donor heart, and yeah. we put the heart in, and as we were warming up the body, you can see the heart kind of quiver. He put two little paddles the size of a spoon on the heart and just shocked it. All of a sudden, it started to beat. Now, that was one of the most fascinating things that I've seen where, wow. okay, this heart is starting to beat. It picks up the pace. It starts to beat. And this child's life is saved.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the appreciation I have of what surgery can do.
Right.
And then I started to look into the different options, and because it's so complex, the body has been compartmentalized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. A general surgeon might just deal with breast surgery and abdominal surgery, orthopedic surgeon dealing with bones and joints, neurosurgeon dealing with the brain and spine, the ophthalmologist with the eye. And plastic surgery gave the broadest area. We could literally treat head to toe. We can work with craniofacial anomalies and help restore some function and shape to birth defects. We are the problem solvers. We have a big cancer and there's a big hole in the body, and we can come and patch and move muscles and skin and repair those difficult wounds that don't heal. We can reattach fingers, arms. Now they're even doing hand transplants. They're doing facial transplants. We're separating conjoined twins. It's just a fascinating area that mm-hmm. it was like, literally, you can go head to toe. Even with microsurgery, we would take a large toe and replace it on an absent thumb, and now they have a thumb, and now they can
have a thumb.
Yeah, there was a Mexican plastic surgeon who was, I believe, in an earthquake. He lost his fingers, and they
did some plastic surgery.
Yes, and they did toe to hand transfer, and he could operate again. So,
wow,
plastic surgery is fairly complex, and I think that's why I chose plastic surgery, to find out what niche.
Yeah.
Now, in my first part of my practice, I did a lot of reconstructive surgery, and then part of reconstructive surgery is trying to put things back to normal,
mm-hmm.
and the aesthetic or cosmetic surgery is doing that to some degree, but also maybe enhancing in certain areas. Mm-hmm. So that's how I.
Wow. So how long have you been practicing?
we just celebrated our 30th year. That's amazing.
It is. Congrats. Thanks. That's a lot to be proud of. Yeah.
And I have a great staff.
Amazing. You know? I know you were telling me some of your staff has been with you since the beginning, so 30 years.
Yes.
That's a huge testament to you and your practice. That's awesome. So you said 30 years, some 10 years. Wow, that's a long time. Yeah.
My staff is the backbone of my practice. And I think that one of the successes is that I don't micromanage.
I let them have the creative freedom to do what they want to do. I think that's huge. The challenging thing I imagine for you, because you're literally working with patients and their lives, right? And having to operate a business.
That's tough.
You know? I would think so. I mean, just as a business owner myself, owning your own and operating your own business is enough work as it is. But taking care of patients on top of that. So how was that? Was that, I imagine, 30 years ago?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, they don't teach you how to be a businessman in medical school.
Yeah.
And it is, you have an option. Go to Kaiser, punch in, punch out, and they have patients for you. But I wanted to go into solo private practice because I think it just gave me more flexibility and what I wanted to do versus having a boss, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I did initially share an office with another plastic surgeon when I first came to Fresno, Dr. Brandt, and I learned a lot from him. And he was in private practice, and we shared some employees, shared offices, and eventually he retired, and then I took over, and then we moved to another facility that gave me a little bit more elbow room and building out a medi spa. So,
cool.
A lot of it is, I like to focus my attention on my patients, but also my employees. You know, I do not take anyone for granted. I tell my employees that the patients are our bosses, right?
Love that.
Because if they don't want to, quote, hire us, we're not going to be busy.
Right.
So it's not, when I used to work with insurance companies, then the patient was only had to, they could only choose from those that are on their plan,
like,
right?
Yeah.
You know, if you have an HMO, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Aetna, you can only go to those that are on the list. People want to come to our office. They have choices, right? They can shop around, and so we are privileged to have them come to our office. And we hope that we have a good relationship, whether or not it's taking care of their skin or whether it's an operation. I feel that they are our bosses. And so without our patients and loyal following, you know, the business can't succeed right with the clients.
Yeah. Right. Well, and you've built such a great reputation here over the last 30 years. And I think it's important to note that a lot of times, in general, people that live in our area decide, oh, I'm just going to go out of town. I'm just going to go out of town to go shopping. I'm just going to go out of town to have an experience or go to an event. Or I'm just going to go out of town to maybe get some work done. And I think it's important to note that you, as one of the premier plastic surgeons in our area, are amazingly do an amazing job. And they don't have to go out of town. They can have surgery here and go home the same day type of thing. And so for people that are thinking about potentially getting something done, what advice would you give them here in the Valley? You said, you know, part of the consult process is to educate them. So at the very least, I imagine thinking about getting a consult would be a good start, right? I don't know. You tell me.
Well, there's so much information online, and I think it's always good to maybe look up a procedure, get some background information. Sometimes you hear influencers say, oh, do it this way, do it that way, I had it done this way. It's good to speak to patients who have had a similar procedure that you're seeking, but you really need to talk to the person who does the procedure, i.e. the doctor. And I always have them start with a consultation. Mm-hmm. And the consultation should be with the person who's going to perform the procedure. It's really important to establish that relationship with them, mm-hmm. because there's other offices that have different models where they don't see the doctor at the first consultation. It may be the salesperson who has a different motivation to sign them up than the doctor.
Right. Yeah, we were kind of touching on that. Yeah. Makes sense. So that's, you have a personalized approach to your
And the process. Doctor has to meet you, mm-hmm. and then try to determine what your goals and expectations are.
Yeah.
Because as doctors, we are in the business of expectation management, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So you talk to the doctor and get an education, and it doesn't hurt to get second consults. Our initial consultation is to educate, and we give them a lot of paperwork to read over, and I ask them to come back for a second consultation. But I think you need to get a kind of a clear understanding of what the procedure involves, what are the risks and complications, and what to expect from the surgery. We have a computer imaging device that we use for noses, for faces, for breasts, for tummies, for liposuction. We take a photo of the patient and we can morph their body. I could select different size implants, different shapes, different sizes. And I think that patient has to understand what their anatomy is, mm-hmm. and what we can do. Because there are going to be limitations. Sometimes they have a large nose and you can make them only so small. Mm-hmm. If they have a small nose, you can only make them so big. Sometimes with breast augmentation, they haven't had any children. They have tight skin. They bring in photographs of models and it may not be possible. Mm-hmm. So they have to understand what their limitations of their anatomy is. So that they can have a...
Well, anatomy, obviously, mm-hmm. as you're saying, but genetics, too. Like, that's mm-hmm. one thing that I'm just experiencing and trying to age gracefully. It's like everybody's skin elasticity is different. Genetics are a huge part of aging or just anything, right? And people don't see that. They probably see a picture and they're like, I want to look like that. And it's like, well, that person's built completely different than you. Different, you know... genetics, do you know?
It's okay to wish, you know?
Yeah.
I give my trainer a picture of Bruce Lee and I say, I want to look like this guy, you know? I wish all I want. But it's a team approach. You know, if I don't do what she says, then there's no way. And mm-hmm. I have delusions mm-hmm. of grandeur if I want to look like him.
Right,
but, you know, I want to improve my tone. I want to lose some weight. So I have to follow her program. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes even at the consultation, I tell them they're not at a good, healthy point to have the surgery.
Right. Like and you so, said, there are risks involved. You want to mm-hmm. make sure that they're going into it with a healthy start. And you mentioned too, like with weight loss, like if for some reason, maybe somebody's looking to lose a significant amount of weight, well, I imagine you probably want to wait to do the surgery until after that happens, right?
Or not? Studies have shown that there are higher risk and complications with higher BMIs, but oftentimes I want to have a healthy patient, mm-hmm. and if weight is an issue with them, and right now, you know, 70% of Americans are either overweight or obese. And it's imperative that they have a good health before they even undergo the operation because there are certain risks of general anesthesia, right?
Right.
And so we have to look at their lab tests, their heart evaluation so that they can, we feel that they can undergo an operation safely.
Yeah.
But their results may change based on, their weight as well. If someone wants a flatter, tighter tummy, and they have some visceral fat inside the abdomen that's related to weight changes, well, I recommend that they lose that first so that they can get a flatter tummy, because otherwise mm-hmm. there's going to be resistance when we try to flatten the tummy.
Right. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we've been talking a lot about female procedures. Do you have any men? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure you do, but like, I would imagine the bulk of your patients are female. Is that right?
That's true.
I don't even know if you could share that.
Yeah.
But like, what sort of procedures are men seeking?
Men are getting more and more into Botox, we'll call it.
Interesting. So they start with
non-surgical things.
Okay.
Through our Medispa.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether or not it's laser hair removal.
Okay, that makes Botox, sense. Botox. Or fillers. Hair growth stimulation. Do you do any of that?
Yeah, we do PRP and we inject it into the scalp. Maybe it's skincare, because men are kind of notorious to not take care of their skin, right?
Right.
And so we're seeing more and more men getting on skincare programs. It's okay to show up at a spa, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that
what
often happens is that the man is accompanying their significant other, and then, you know, you just, or they see maybe something that their significant other has some improvement, and then, or the significant other says, hey, you should do this too.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I've heard. The wife kind of drags them and says, the 11s are looking real deep. Come with me.
That's right. So we're seeing him do more skincare.
Makes sense. I could see that.
Men like to have their noses, do rhinoplasties. Mm. We see gynecomastia, which is gynecomastia is enlargement of breasts on men.
Oh, yeah.
And so you think about having a nice physique. You can have a nice physique and want to take off your shirt at the beach, but if you have female-looking breasts, that's really discouraging, and they're self-conscious. And so we're seeing a lot of gynecomastia to reduce the size of the breast to make it look more more masculine.
Yeah.
And sometimes you try to etch out their chest muscles as well. So targeted liposuction, the muffin top is always hard to lose on both men and women, but we see that in men as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the bariatric surgery and the weight loss surgery now, we're seeing more and more men with weight loss.
Like skin and stuff?
Yeah, extra skin that they want to have removed.
So you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. I feel like you have a wide range of things that you offer, which probably makes it fun, right? Like no 2 days are the same.
No, they aren't. No.
Yeah.
Variety is good.
Yeah.
but it's there. That type of surgery, bariatric surgery, has left them with a lot. You know, you have your friends saying, hey, you look great, George, or Sandy, hey, you look, but then sometimes they're very unhappy. You know, they've lost 100 pounds, they look better, but clothes do a lot, right?
Right.
Yeah, and so they still have a lot of issues with, intimacy or self-image, and so
confidence.
We have to remove a lot of skin on some of these patients, and it could be from weight loss from non-bariatric pregnancies and so forth.
Right. So of all the things that you've done, what would you say is the most rewarding part of your job? Your profession, I should say.
Putting a smile on our patients.
Sweet. Love that.
I mean, absolutely. Oftentimes patients are reluctant to come in. They have some emotional issues, and they're brave enough to even make that first step. And then I am shocked how they are so open to me. I mean, they're meeting me for the first time, and they're getting really intimate, right?
Right, I would think so,
About why they want to have something done.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're getting undressed. And then they're showing me things that they don't even want their spouse to see.
Yeah.
So I really...
they're vulnerable, right?
Absolutely.
They're showing you essentially some of their insecurities, right? I never thought about it that way, but that's a very personal, experience to have with you. Yeah. So you feel connected with them, I'm sure, and want to support them.
Yeah. And so I think that's a privilege to be there for them, and they're... they're just letting everything out on online so mm-hmm. that and so that I can try to understand and help them. And sometimes they have emotional issues that I still, almost like a psychiatrist, you know, I mean, I have to deal with the psyche as well. Mm-hmm. And we might get some people who are drinking too much. And I say, you have to take care of that first. And then, because this won't solve your problems, right? Mm-hmm. And if I identify health issues that, okay, this is more important than having elective cosmetic surgery.
Right. Because that's the truth. I mean, most everything you do is elective, right?
Right. This is surgery that
they're choosing,
that you don't necessarily need but want.
Correct. Right? Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting point, right? Yeah.
And so I like to solve their problems. I like to make them happier. Like I said, I want to put a smile on their face. I think that's what makes me keep on wanting to go every day.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not it's they're walking down the hall and saying, look, my skin's glowing, you know, and mm-hmm. and my acne scars are looking better. That's really rewarding. And for me, my staff.
Yeah, I bet. Know, yeah. I bet. That's amazing. Yep. So for those that are interested in learning more about your practice or your offerings, your website, right? MarkChinMD.com is probably the best mm-hmm. way to start. Mm-hmm. And there they can explore different types of procedures that you offer and potentially inquire about a consultation, right? Either online or by calling.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's the first step. And like I said, talk to the professional who is actually going to do the procedure, not mm-hmm. someone who just wants to sign you up, right? Because
that's terrifying.
We spend a lot of time just trying to find out their medical histories to see if they're even a candidate for surgery.
Ah.
And then we spend a lot of time with the physical exam and the,
mm-hmm.
and going over the procedure, trying on implants and so forth, and then say what, you know, offering to, for them to come back for a second consultation so we can clarify. Because I feel sometimes I give them so much information, it might be overwhelmed.
They're probably overwhelmed, right?
Yeah, and you can't make a decision just based on, you know, an hour and a half consultation. Some do, but yeah, for the most part, I don't take that for granted. I want them to be mm-hmm. fairly informed. And then come back, and then again, even at the pre-op, we go over mm-hmm. and go over the same concerns. And mm-hmm. then even on the day of, as we're marking them mm-hmm. going over it. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that I'm able to help reach their expectations.
That's
and their
great.
Goals.
Yeah. No, that's mm-hmm. great. Well, thank you for sharing. I think I appreciate the value you're bringing to the Valley for 30 years now. Congratulations on that. That's mm-hmm. a huge testament to you and your practice and your team. And thanks for sharing your story and informing me. I feel like I learned a lot, and I hope our listeners feel the same way. So thank you, Dr. Chin.
Thanks for being here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Appreciate the invite.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for listening. Feel free to rate and review this episode here and connect with us on Instagram if you have any thoughts, questions, or any guest suggestions. Thanks.